Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Virginia is Susan Divers. Susan is Senior Advisor at LRN, and today we're going to be talking about the latest LRN Program Effectiveness Report. First of all, Susan, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Adam.
Ours as well. So now, what's interesting to me when I looked at the report is that it revealed a very positive ethics story. It seems as if commitment to ethics and values grew stronger during this time and helped companies through the era. Am I reading that correctly?
You are, Adam. And we were somewhat surprised, but also very heartened by what the data told us. I remember chairing a webinar back in March, and Edward Queen from Emory University is the one who coined the phrase that COVID was a stress test for ethics and compliance programs. Either they were going to fade into the wallpaper or they were going to be front and center. There probably wasn't going to be much in between. And what the survey says is that they were front and center and really helped organizations cope with the effect of the crisis.
That's really heartening news. Now, it seems also that values were embraced more strongly than rules. It makes sense given that things, especially early, were changing so quickly. There really wasn't the guidance there. You had to go back to something more fundamental than that. Is that what you found, and what were the implications if so?
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to include the case study of Braskin USA is I think it's a really good illustration of the central role that values played. And in that case study, which is in the PEI, the Program Effectiveness Report, basically employees volunteered to lock themselves in the plants for as long as 30 days at a time. And the company, of course, supplied overtime, extra pay, food, drink, and people could leave if they needed to leave. But the purpose of it was to keep the electrical grid healthy and running. And you couldn't force anyone to do that. I mean, that's not something that you could have a rule that says, you know, in a crisis, you have to volunteer to self-isolate for 30 days in a plant. So that's a perfect illustration of the role that values played. And I do a lot of work with the World Bank from time to time, and they have a wonderful saying, which is that rules encourage the minimum and values encourage the maximum. So I think the report really documents that and illustrates it.
Yeah, it sounds like a great example of it, and I love that phrase. And I think we also could see a lot of that too. I think in the early days of the pandemic, especially as we came to, you know, really appreciate all the roles in society around us and their importance and the value in them, I think it made us think differently about a lot of our approaches to things and embracing people's commitment. Now, as compliance and ethics programs adjusted to the pandemic, it wasn't all perfect, though. I mean, you found some stress points. What were they?
Well, one of them was that in some regards, programs didn't pivot quickly. I mean, that's not true of a large segment of the 650 survey respondents, but it was significant enough that we called it out in the report. To take one very good example, only 24% of the respondents indicated that they responded to the pandemic by using mobile devices to deliver training. And when you think about that, that's actually profound because employees were marooned at home. Some of them had maybe only one home computer and perhaps kids and spouses that were trying to use it. Some of them had limited bandwidth. And so by basically requiring that people be chained to their computer in order to do training or find program resources, it was an inconvenience. And we tell the story of Dell in the report. It's another case study where they realized right away when they started working from home that they wanted to go full bore mobile. And they actually worked with us to put together their program basically in mobile phones, and it was a resounding success. And they've loaded more and more features into it, not just training. I don't think they're ever going to go back to just desktop applications as a way to deliver programs. So that's a great example of where people perhaps drop the ball a bit.
But eventually, I think, you know, it sounds like they, like a lot of companies, did, you know, picked up their game, and now we're finding all sorts of new stuff. And in funny ways, it reminds me of like hand sanitizer and wipes. For a while, you couldn't find any, and now you can't turn around at a store without bumping into a pile of it. The survey also revealed some concerns for the long term, especially if organizations continuing offering more remote work options. For example, there were serious worries expressed about conducting investigations. So all this is sort of a lead into the question is, what's keeping compliance teams up at night?
Well, I'll tell you something interesting about the investigations point. I had the privilege of having Louis Sapperman from Panasonic on a panel a couple of weeks ago, and he commented on that, and he said, sure, it's a change to have to do remote investigations, but we'll do them better as a result. We'll do them more efficiently because we don't have to travel to go on site. So Louis is very good at seeing the silver lining in any cloud, but it really made me think for a minute. And we've seen that with a lot of programs, they're able to find people by using platforms like Zoom and engage them when before everybody was traveling the world or hopping on and off airplanes, it was more difficult. So I do want to note that. But compliance officers, part of their job, of course, is to try to see around the corner. And there is worry that because most businesses did suffer as a result economically of the pandemic, that there will be pressure to cut staff and resources. That, as you mentioned, investigations and that remote work, when you don't have the influence of your colleagues or the ease of just popping your head in to talk to someone about a question, that there may be some drift in terms of behavior. And then there's also a worry that business is resuming and there may be pressure to circumvent controls such as third-party vetting. So that is a legitimate worry, but I haven't heard anecdotally that has started to actually occur yet.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think this is a period that's shown us there's a lot more that's possible that can be done using technology and without having to be face-to-face. But at the same time, I do wonder if, you know, just as we're experiencing a microchips shortage now, we're going to experience something of an oversight shortage as business again resumes and part of the workforce is in place, part of it is still working remotely, and are your controls adjusting? And to something you hinted at a little bit before was that, you know, we've lost the casual conversation, and if that continues, that's going to be a big gap, because from what I hear from compliance people over and over again, it's often those conversations are the most instructive, not necessarily for finding that there's a major problem, but as a way to head off them from happening. Now, one piece of data to me that was troubling and consistent with other research is the gap in behavior between senior leadership and middle management. Your survey found that leadership scored better in measures such as responding in a way that was consistent with the organization's purpose and values and embracing transparency than middle management did. Now, I know LRN is big on the question how, but let me ask the question why. Why the gap? Is it that the leaders tend to be more ethical, that they get it more, that managers feel too stressed? And if it's the latter, that the managers are too stressed, isn't that a fault of the leadership?
Well, that's a very good question, and that was a troubling finding. Anecdotally, when I've discussed it with ethics and compliance officers, the answer comes back that, especially during the pandemic, managers were just frantic to keep the business operating, to figure out how to move everybody onto remote platforms that they could, or in the example of Braskem, how to keep the electrical grid up and going. And that, maybe their bandwidth was just substantially lower for anything else. And that would be a sort of better answer than it's just not on their radar and they don't think about it. And I did hear that also from one of my panelists a week or so ago, that middle managers really just didn't have time to think about or deal with those kinds of questions. That's still not ideal, as you know, Adam. And it's something that we track. And we believe that putting as many tools in the hands of middle managers to make it as easy as possible to have compliance resources and to have toolkits and to understand what they can do is something that would really strengthen anyone's ethics and compliance program.
And certainly, I think we're just as we've emphasized resiliency over the last year, I think we're also going to need to emphasize the need to constantly strengthen the underlying foundation in this area as we adjust to the new normal, whatever it ultimately turns out to be, because it certainly does seem as if we're going to be in a more normal phase, but it's certainly one that's going to be markedly different sometime soon. Well, Susan, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.